Welcome to the Blog A podcast, featuring interviews with industry professionals in the business of creating online media and promotional tips that will help you succeed in generating buzz online. I'm your host, Mayanna Stevenson, and the creator of BlogAid. Be sure to check out the website at blogaid.net for more podcasts, free downloads, video tutorials, WordPress training, and site consulting. We hope you enjoy this podcast and feel free to share it with your friends. Hello, happy site owners. I'm your host, Mayanna, and today on the BlogAid podcast, I'm delighted to have James Ashenhurst as my guest. I was so impressed by his presentation at WordCamp this year that I asked him to come on the podcast and share his story. Now, let me tell you a little bit about James. His favorite subject in college was organic chemistry, but his poor grade in the course convinced him for years that he was just too dumb to ever succeed at it. After nearly dropping out of science altogether, he rediscovered his passion during a year of travel, going to earn his PhD in organic chemistry from McGill University, a postdoctoral fellowship at MIT, and a widely cited paper in the journal Science. In 2010, he founded Master Organic Chemistry, which is a web resource devoted to making organic chemistry concepts more accessible and intuitive for undergraduate students. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is his journey to creating that site. Welcome to the podcast, James.
Well, thank you very much, Mayanna. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it is. I'm just thrilled with your story. I mean, I saw when you were starting out and your whole journey through this, and then your presentation at WordCamp telling the whole story. I had no idea you had taken off at this level.
Yes, at the current, basically I'm on track this year for about 2 million visitors and somewhere between 4 and 5 million page views.
Well, wow, I mean, I am so thrilled for you. I want to back all the way up and tell folks how you got to that point, because that's thrilling, but it's not just been just a straight line with no difficulty.
Absolutely not.
And I think a lot of people get scared and overwhelmed about trying to do something like that, and I want you to tell your story about how you walked into this one step at a time and the changes that you had to make along the way. So tell us a little bit about your background, because that was really interesting, too, about your peers, you know, what they thought about this and your fears about getting into it altogether.
Well, I started my PhD as an organic chemist quite a while ago. It was 2001. And there's a lot of great things about the discipline. There's a lot of rigor to it, but you work very hard, long hours in the lab, and there's sort of, you're told that when you finish your PhD, there's really two tracks available to you. You work in academia as a professor, or you work in industry. So in my field, basically those types of people work for Merck and Pfizer and stuff like that. And I thought that I wanted to go down the academic route. And after I finished my PhD, I did a postdoctoral fellowship at MIT for 2 years. And that basically for 8 or 9 years, I barely saw the light of day. And that's an exaggeration, but we're talking 70, 80 hour weeks. There's not a lot of time to really think about your career. And then in 2009, actually, I was living in Jerusalem with my wife doing another postdoctoral fellowship. And it turned out that the job market at that time for academics was very poor. I had applied for academic positions in 2008 and 2009, and those were both very bad years. I didn't actually obtain an academic position. And secondly, I've noticed that my friends who were working in industry, these supposedly safe and stable jobs, these plants were closing, especially in Canada, where I'm originally from. And there wasn't as many jobs for organic chemists as there used to be. And it was around this time that I sort of had this crazy, I had a little bit more time to think with my job in Israel, Jerusalem, and I realized that I was really scared of the prospect of someone telling me that I had to move or that I was fired. And this crazy idea came to my head that I should start my own business. Actually, I had six months of a first failed business, which is a scientific communication business called WriteChem, which I never got a client. But then I started thinking, it's true. I was cold writing people in China, thinking that they would like to have their websites edited for proper English. And never once did I get a single client. But back in, I think it was January, February 2010, do you remember Chat Roulette?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's known for other things besides this, but the Chat Roulette, where you basically dial anyone up in the world and you could talk to them through video. this idea came to me that basically the world's become a very small place. I was in Israel, but I thought there was an opening for people who might want to have a tutoring in over the internet through Skype, like video tutoring. So like chat roulette, but a lot more confined to organic chemistry. And so that's kind of where it started. I had this idea that I could do that. And then my wife told me that I was crazy, that there was no one would ever want that. But I don't know, I just tried it out. And in order to promote this online tutoring, which is what my core proposition was, I knew that there's a lot of students who struggle in this course. I loved organic chemistry. It's what I wanted to do. I wanted to teach. And this would allow me to teach, but work for myself. And in order to be able to promote my tutoring, I needed to have a hook. I needed to provide value to people, some excuse to come to my site. So I started writing content I started a WordPress blog, and that's sort of how it all started. That's a very long-winded introduction to how it all started, but I knew that I wanted to start my own business by that point.
Yeah, well, that's not long-winded, because people think, I just got this idea and I just created a blog, and that's not it at all. And one of the things that I want to mention there and bring up is that you failed on your first attempt. I mean, the first idea that you had just went flat.
Yep.
And you kind of breezed through that saying, I just never got a client and just moved on. But, the reality of how that feels is very discouraging. And I think a lot of people try something once, they get all excited about it, they have a great idea, and it was a great idea, but they fail and they stop. And you got through that and moved on to the next idea and found something else that would work even better.
Yeah, that's right. I had thousands of emails that I sent so I essentially got no response. And I just never, that project never worked out. What I found myself doing was a lot of writing in the mornings. This is sort of my way of dealing with problems when I have them. I'm not sure which way to go next I just write things out. And I remember it was vivid. It was in the middle of January 2010 that suddenly I had this idea that I should, try this online tutoring through Skype. And then from there, after that, I think I stopped writing. I think I was writing for 6 months straight. And then once I got that idea, I was like, geez, I should really do this. And, I tried it out. And like I said, it started getting a little bit of traction. And I just felt like this, I really need to do this. It's almost like mm-hmm. marching orders, no one's doing this, you must do this.
Well, let's talk about that, because one of the things that you said in the WordCamp presentation, too, was how your peers felt about you doing something like this. I mean, that was a little scary, too, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, there's certainly a fear involved in starting up. My plan was basically to write a blog or an online guide for organic chemistry aimed squarely at people who are non-chemists, people who are taking this course for the first time. And in case nobody knows this, organic chemistry is usually like the weeder course for students who want to get into medical school and dental school. Many, many students, probably 300,000 or 400,000 students a year, and that might be on the low side, have to take this course. It's of all the courses in the pre-med curriculum, it's kind of the one which causes the most pain. And I wanted to write for these people. I wanted to write for an audience of people whom this was a difficult course, and I wanted to make it easier for them. Go ahead.
Well, I want to stop right there because you've got so much to say, but I want to back up to some of it because our listeners really need to be able to take this from what you're doing into what they can do.
Right.
Too. But, and so I want to bring out one thing. You had your target audience.
That's right.
And you knew what their pain points were.
That's right.
That is radically important to your success, and you easily identified that, because out of all that you know and all that you could teach and all that you could write for, you picked out the one that practically everybody has to have it to go on to with their advanced degrees, and the one that's the hardest for them.
That's right. And that came from my experience in graduate school working as a teaching assistant, where I was, leading these tutorial sessions for students. And I knew that I was actually kind of bad at it. And there's a good reason why. And that is that all the people who are supposed to be teaching organic chemistry to non-chemists, there's a lot of things on the plate of a graduate student. And their boss is essentially the research supervisor their priority is to do research, not to teach. And in many research universities, this is not exclusive, but it's common that you have someone who's teaching the course, but their real passion lies in working with PhDs and doing advanced cutting-edge research. And their real passion is not so much teaching the introductory parts of organic chemistry, especially to some students who really aren't that interested in organic chemistry per se. They're just using it, you know, for a credential that they're going to get later on down the road. So I did know that pain point, and I did know that it wasn't being well addressed by, you know, many cases by traditional academia. And I thought there was an opening for someone who's not affiliated with academia to basically step into that void and to sort of be on the student's side, if you will.
Yeah, I want to translate that for other folks, too, to apply it to other, not translate it, but this is kind of like applied physics where, you know, we take an idea and put it over into something that they can work. And there are three or four different success things that you're seeing in this. One is people who don't really have the passion for talking to, or the knowledge or the time or the interest or whatever for talking to people where they are. They're not really meeting them where they are, and you are doing that. And I find a lot of folks who do online marketing coaching type things or site coaching or whatever, they say, oh, go set up this, and then when you come back, I'll tell you what to do with it. But, you know, that's kind of the void that I fill, is I get in the trenches and tell you all that technical set it up stuff or set it up for you or whatever it is, but very few people are dealing with folks at that level. They want to deal with the higher level things or after that kind of stuff. So that's one huge part of success. You not only found your target audience, you found that nobody was really addressing them where they were.
Correct. Yeah, certainly I think it was Made to Stick. I had a line in there about the expert's curse, where once you become an expert, you almost forget what it's like to have learned it in the beginning. And I'm not saying that I was there when I started tutoring. I was very much still... I've still sort of had that expert's curse, if you will, but it's sort of getting further down the road. But after I'd had a few dozen students, I really got a great idea of where they were coming from, and I was able to essentially aim my blog and my teaching towards them more effectively.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of professors say they really didn't understand a subject until they started teaching it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think teaching it teaches you a lot about what you're doing. I know it did for me with WordPress and everything else is I had to define – well, of course, I write a lot of technical manuals, so I write for people who've never seen this before.
Right.
So I kind of had that, but and I sort of think that way. But teaching it really – there are questions, the questions that came back. And what's this? What's that? Can you explain that better? I think the process of trying to teach somebody else how to do it teaches you.
That's correct.
Too.
I would agree.
Let's jump over to the site itself, because I know we could talk all day about, you know, your story is embedded in how you walk through this thing.
That's right.
So your initial site that you set up for this, what were your goals with that? How did you do that? Tell us about that part of the story.
Right. So I knew who I wanted to write for, and I had my idea of my niche that I wanted to address. So I had spent probably 6 to 8 months just reading obsessively about starting like startups and so forth previously and freelancing. So I'd sort of taken a lot of that. A resource that was really helpful for me was Ramit Sethi's I Will Teach You to Be Rich. He's got all of his delicious bookmarks freely available. Anyone can read them. And like there's a whole section on entrepreneurship and marketing and blogging and everything else. Phenomenal resource. I just basically read all of his delicious bookmarks, and I felt like I was a lot more up to date with kind of where things were blogging wise by the beginning of 2010. And I realized that, you know, saw that everyone seemed to be starting using these WordPress blogs. They seemed to be very easy to set up, so that seemed like the logical thing to do. It was free. That was another thing. And I just thought that this was an experiment. That was kind of my initial thought was, you know, this is an experiment. I'm going to try this out. And I'm just going to write a few posts. And if it's total absolute failure, I can always just delete everything. archive.org might find it. But, you know, I just thought that, you know, no one, I'm hoping, I had my experience of six 6 to 8 months writing this failed business where I saw like my web traffic was very low. And I thought, you know, I didn't think I was going to get a lot of traffic in the beginning. And I was okay with that. I kind of wanted just some to write and just to find my voice that first little while. That was my goal when I started, was just to find my voice and to slowly get better at writing. And then eventually I was hoping that down the road I might get to a point where you know, I'd get maybe 1,000 visits in a day or 2,000 visits in a day. Like, that would be amazing. You know, if I got to a point like that.
Right.
I remember Ramit reading one of Ramit Sethi's posts. He said his site got 300,000 visitors a month. And I was just, that's ridiculous. How does anyone get that kind of traffic? That just seems impossible. I'll never get there. But, you know, I'll just do my own little thing, and I give myself permission to run the worst blog in the world.
Well, but that's very important. I don't think people know how important that is. I'm laughing, but setting your expectations in reality. So let's jump back to a couple of things that you said. So you'd had all this time of writing, which was helping you find your voice. But, you know, when you started this particular thing, you also, prior to starting it, you did 6 to 8 months of research and reading to get yourself into the mindset of running an online business.
That's right.
Which is really crazy important, because a lot of people will just jump in there and do their blog and do this kind of writing, but they never grasp the whole business side of things. And it really takes a while to get that marketing mindset going so that you understand how to brand awareness and how to focus what you're doing into something that is sellable, not just giving away the store, so that you have all this free content that brings people in, shows your expertise, but then you have something left to sell them.
That's right. Yeah, I'd say that really important to this was having a job that I didn't like.
yes, and highly motivated.
And writing and reading a lot in my spare time, of course, with the goal that I would one day, you know, to be able to work for myself. Actually, that was really the dream with this whole thing, was that I would be able to work for myself, set my own hours, you know, have my time to myself so that I could read as much as I wanted to read and do whatever I wanted to do and not be, you know, not work in this terrible job anymore. Mm-hmm. And that was really the prime motivation, that if I just found the right, you know, situation, that I'd be able to do that. And
how long did you think it was going to take you to get to your whatever you set as your goal? Well, tell us about your goal, what you thought success would be, and how long was it going to take you to get there?
Success would be working for myself, you know, where I didn't have to have, I just worked for myself and have my own job, and I just, you know, set my own hours. And I thought that I would be able to do that. I was hoping I'd be able to do that in a year. And that would mean that basically, like, my goal was online tutoring. So I was hoping that I would get enough clients within a year, let's say, that would be able to support me, you know, at a modest level. And actually, the modest level, you know, your average postdoc makes, which is what I was working at the time, makes $30,000 US a year. And I thought, wow, you know, if I can make $30,000 US a year, or even like 25, then I can quit my job, because the pay in my job in Jerusalem was about 20,000 US a year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really all I wanted, was just something like that. And so that would enable me to tell my wife that I was going to quit my job and work for myself, without her, you know, putting up too much of a fight. That was my goal, to get enough tutoring clients that I would be able to justify that.
Right. Now, what technology did you start with? You mentioned Skype before.
Right. So I started my blog with WordPress. I had Skype, and that's really I had an old school MacBook or a PowerBook. So I needed to buy a camera for that. So like a USB camera. So I had my USB camera, I had my laptop, and I had Skype. And so the first couple tutoring clients I got, I mean, you can go into the details of how I did that, but it's probably not that important, is you know, I would have my webcam on. I'm in Jerusalem. They're in, you know, New York, wherever. And I have this whiteboard I bought from like Office Depot or the equivalent thereof in Jerusalem. And I was writing on it with a marker, and I was showing it in front of the video camera. And so they would see my webcam, what I'd drawn on my whiteboard, and then that's where they'd get their information from. And that's kind of that was pretty low tech. But that's how I did my online tutoring in the beginning. And that's actually what I did that for about a year. No other technology really, no microphone, except I used the free WordPress blog. That was good for the first year and 2 years, almost year and a half. Nothing else really.
So basically you started the business for a couple of $100 of investment in stuff.
Yeah. Domain name, hosting, not even hosting. I mean, I had to buy the domain name.
Yeah, because you were on WordPress.com, right?
Correct. That's right.
Yeah, so a couple of $100, and you're in business for a year. I mean, you're collecting money, and so, you know, you made your $200 back,
yep,
or how much ever it cost.
Yes, I did.
And then after that, you're pretty much getting paid for your time. So that's not a bad return on investment, you know, when you think about it. But starting where you are is the real message there with what you've got.
Yeah, that's right.
As low tech as it may be, you know, it worked.
It was. I'll never forget the feeling of having earned $20 online from a stranger, essentially, for just spending an hour talking to her son about organic chemistry.
Wow!
And he was.
Wow, that's so cool.
He was in Washington State at a very small community college, and I was in Jerusalem. And like when that PayPal email came, like you've got money. It was just that feeling that I'd earned an income outside of that belonged to me. It didn't come from my boss. That was a phenomenal feeling. And nothing's come, even, you know, I've done better since then, but nothing's come close to actually that first $20.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, especially after not succeeding at the first thing that you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's got to feel really good. But, you know, it's like I said, low tech is not a problem. People want the information that you've got, and they're less concerned about how you're delivering it. They're more focused on the quality mm-hmm. of the information that they're getting.
That's right.
So tell us about promoting your services. How did you get more students?
So I used what some people have referred to as kind of the honeypot strategy. So I didn't really reach out that much. In the beginning, a little bit. I guess I reached out for some tutoring students. My long-term goal, actually, I should back up. Okay, in the beginning, to get students, what I would do is I would search. I would use Google site search for Craigslist, and I would search, you know, site Craigslist.org organic chemistry tutor, and then I'd confine the search to like 1 week. So everyone who'd asked for a tutor on Craigslist in the last week, wherever they were, you know, I would find those postings and then I would email them. And that's how I got my first client. Like I said, she posted in Craigslist in Washington State, and she was expecting to get a tutor from Washington State, but, you know, someone in her community, but she got me, you know, from Jerusalem. And, you know, I said, you know, I've got a PhD, and I mean, although I don't think you need to have a PhD to be able to do this type of, tutoring I do. But, you know, I said that I'd be happy to work with your son, and let's just give it a shot. And I always, actually, in the beginning, I offered my first session free, so it was, you know, no risk to her at all. That was a lot of Craigslist in the beginning, and then there was another service called Tutor Nation, where they just post these people who are looking for tutors in specific subjects, and you just have to cold email them, and, you know, maybe a third of those turn into people who I worked with in some form. But then over time, that was the first five or six months. And then after that, in the meantime, I was writing blog posts, trying to write 3 blog posts a week, which is actually quite a bit.
Yeah, it is.
And after doing that for about 6 months, I was starting to get a little bit more traffic to my blog. And the hope was that when people arrived on my – and they were searching Google to solve these typical problems that people encounter in organic chemistry – like students encounter in organic chemistry. And the hope was that a small percentage of the students who arrived on my blog would click the online organic chemistry tutoring banner in the menu bar at the very top. And then they would see me And they would request a meeting for tutoring. That's kind of how it works. So I tried to attract people to my site with good content, and that a small percentage of the people who visited my site would be interested in tutoring, and that they would just find that page and they would contact me. And after about 6 months, that was actually the dominant way in which I did attract students.
Well, I want to talk about those things too, because you basically were going to where people were looking for the things that you did.
That's right.
The first thing you did. But in the meantime, while you were doing that, and that took 5 or 6 months, you were also building up your SEO and authority on your site with all this blog posting.
That's right. Yeah.
So that the SEO could kick in. But I want to make it very clear to everybody that's listening that if you're going to go the SEO route with things, it takes time. And you were saying you didn't really start getting that traffic until about 6 months of consistent blogging.
Yeah, like my first month, I think I had maybe 300 page views for the whole month. And then it got, you know, a little higher. I think, you know, 1,000 page views in a month. That was kind of exciting. I don't have my stats in front of me at the moment, but it stuck. It really was in a, you know, maybe like 100 page views, and then it got sort of like 100 page views a day for a long time. And you know, that was months and months and months and months, and then slowly started, you know, it slowly started growing.
Yeah, I've been there too, where I had like 2,000 page views for the month.
Mm-hmm.
And it just stuck. And it just would not, no matter what I did, it just wouldn't go anywhere. And then something broke, you know, open for me. And poof, there it went. And then I get to a next plateau and, you know, something else breaks. Like you have a number one post on Google, or you get something that goes viral, or, you know, get into a forum or something that makes it take off. All these people find you, and then they become regular readers, and you get all that traffic regularly. So, yeah, I mean, you have to just keep going in between those breaks, and you do hit plateaus.
That's right.
All the way through. So that's pretty much your first year.
Yeah, I think my first year I had a total of 50,000 page views. And I was thrilled to have 50,000 page views.
Yeah, I think that's very realistic for a first year of blogging.
You know, by the end of that first year, I was, 6 or 7 months in, I had actually, my contract had ended, so I was actually working. By that time, I was tutoring. I had enough students that I could justify, like, doing this at home and just working for myself. And actually, this is kind of a crazy part of this online tutoring, you know, when you've got this huge time difference. So when I decided to devote myself to it full time, which is, so it would be about 6 or 7 months after I started, because of the time difference, I would wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, Israel time, Jerusalem time, to tutor students at 7 o'clock, PM EST. And I'd work, I'd work for 6 hours until like 8 AM. I'd, go for a run, and then I'd eat, you know, I'd eat breakfast, go for a run, go to sleep, wake up at 2 PM, work a little bit in the afternoon, just like write blog posts and stuff. And then my wait for my wife to come home from her work to have dinner. And I might work, do another session, and then I go to bed around 8 or 9, and then wake up, you know, wake up at 2 a.m. and repeat. So it's kind of like biphasic sleep. I did that for a couple of months.
Yeah, nobody talks about the sacrifices, do they?
Yeah. And,
of things that you have to do. I remember, and just to bring in one other thing to relate it to blog posting and stuff, I remember Christy Hines when she was establishing her tribe and establishing herself as one of the premier bloggers and to be a, you know, have a career as a pro blogger. Oh, yeah, before Hootsuite and things like that. Yeah, she was up at 3 and 4 a.m. making sure that her stuff was on social media. And, yeah, nobody talks about all the sacrifices, do they?
Well, yeah, I was determined never to work for anyone else again.
That'll do it to you. Hey, tell us about something fun. What happened with Boing Boing?
So, you know, organic chemistry content by itself is not particularly viral, as you can imagine. You're teaching a subject which, you know, takes some – there's a lot of – you sort of have to learn the stuff before you can really appreciate it. And the number of people who would retweet something like that is not that high. However, one thing about living in Jerusalem is that there's all these feral sort of wild cats that that roam around. You never want to touch them, but they're really cute. They sort of like perform the same tasks that raccoons do or in North America. They kind of like go through the garbage and stuff, so dumpster cats, basically. And I just, you know, I was kind of obsessed with, I'm not actually a cat person, but I was kind of obsessed with Jerusalem's dumpster cats. So I take pictures of them all the time, even, you know, was before even I thought about doing this. When I was living in Jerusalem, I was just like, my wife and I would be walking to work, and then suddenly she'd realize that she was talking to empty space, and she looked behind her, and there I am taking more pictures of dumpster cats. and then I realized that, actually, you know what? It's crazy, but cats have this strange resemblance to this, what we call a line drawing in organic chemistry, because carbons are tetrahedral, and cats, if you look at them and draw the right, very suggestive line, wireframe, you know, in the cat, you can kind of show how they're a little bit like small molecules. You can actually use them to teach these concepts in organic chemistry.
That's fun.
And so here we have the perfect combination for an entry point for people who are otherwise struggle with a certain concept is, well, everyone understands cats. And actually, it's a weird thing about organic chemistry in general is just that everyone has the ability to manipulate things in 3D. It's just that they're only things that they're familiar with in 3D that they have an easy time with, and they find it hard with organic chemistry to manipulate these sort of abstract things. So I took something that was very concrete to people, cats, and I used it to help illustrate a concept which was, for them, many of them, was very abstract. And it was actually quite successful, and people would write in saying, you know, I didn't really understand this concept at all until, you know, I've read this. I wrote a series of blog posts on cats, and cats in organic, you know, for this concept, to apply this concept, which is called stereochemistry. And kind of, you know, I wrote, I think, 8 posts on it. And then it got picked up by Reddit, and eventually got picked up by, I think, in January 2011, it got picked up by Boing Boing. You know, and the tagline was, organic chemistry is made of cats. Like the internet, you know.
Yeah, so that's great.
Anytime you can involve cats in anything that you're blogging about, that's a great way to make your content viral. If you can find some excuse.
Oh, absolutely. And now you got to include bacon. If you can just put bacon in there, you've got it made.
Apparently, yeah. Mm-hmm. I haven't hit the bacon bandwagon, but cats for sure. So
I know, man. I put out a post, and this was a couple of years ago. I put out a post that had a kitty cat looking at a laptop, and the post just took off like crazy, and it had nothing to do with the subject line. It was the picture of that cat, you know. So, yeah, I get you.
Well, you know, living in Israel is pretty hard to find a lot of bacon, too.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. No doubt. I bet. Oh, okay. So that pretty much just took you all through, you know, your first year and a half.
That's right.
And then you started making upgrades because now you're getting more successful and you want to add some other things. Plus you've learned more and technology has changed.
Right.
So tell us what you did. And you started getting that marketing mindset of, oh, products. Let's add that too. What happened?
Yeah. So, okay. So after the first, say, year and a half, it was during this time that I was had my period of biphasic sleep. Where I thought to myself, you know, I'm really happy that I have students and God bless them, but I would love to have a business where I have products and I don't have to physically work for every dollar that I earn. There's some source of income that can come in that doesn't depend on my time. That would be phenomenal.
Yeah, stop trading that dollar for hours thing.
And so that sort of stuck with me that I need to think about doing something like that. And, you know, by this point, I think a year in, I had a pretty steady stream of clients. I mean, September was always dead. August and September was always dead. But then, like, exam time comes, you know, mid-October, midterm season begins, and suddenly it's a flood. And that was fantastic. So, but you spend a couple hundred hours talking to students about this subject. You see a lot of patterns starting to repeat. You see a lot of questions they're asking repeat themselves, and their problems come up as well. And one problem which they came up with that I had a lot, the students are saying, you know, I'm having a really, really hard time just getting all these reagents straight. And you think of reagents kind of like, you know, you open your spice cabinet in the kitchen and, you know, think of in organic chemistry and these reactions, we have these, you know, chemicals we add to reactions, these reagents that we use that help the, you know, or participate in the reaction. And getting them all straight was very difficult for students. And what they really wanted but didn't have was a guide to all of these different reagents in organic chemistry. And the textbook was a little bit too diffuse for them. I mean, it was maybe 1,000 pages, and all these things were spread out through that 1,000 pages. So they really wanted something that was condensed and that explained that sort of was a reference for everything. So I think it would be around, January, February 2011 is when I started to build this reagent guide. And it took a couple hours a day for a few months. It was probably between 100 and 200 hours it took to make this. It was a little bit crazy to do it at the time. I didn't know that it would, I don't know if it would sell, but I just thought that people need this, and I needed it too for my own tutoring.
Yeah.
I wanted my students to be successful, and I wanted to be able to say, okay, you need, you know, if you need a reference for this kind of stuff, here is this resource. That so I could use it for my tutoring as well as for those that didn't tutor, I could sell it. It would have been around June 2011 that I put this together as a PDF and I started selling it on a store, basically a storefront called Shopify. And they let you sell digital products.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I got the idea for that is a webcast, which I listen to almost obsessively, is by a guy named Andrew Warner. It's called Mixergy. And they always have really – you listen to enough interviews and you hear repeating themes and sort of like technology that people use and the services they use as well. So I got the idea to use Shopify from his webcast. Advertising in Action, actually. Shopify is one of his sponsors. So I used Shopify, and that, you know, I won't ever forget the first time I sold a product. You know, it was very, very, very slow at first, but, you know, to be able to sell, to make money from, you know, without selling my time was another big breakthrough.
Oh, yeah. And did you get your development costs back on that for all the hours it took you to create it?
Yes, I did.
That's the main thing because, you know, I want to go back to a few points, but you being able to reference that, you have it as a reference source for the clients that are paying you hourly is one thing, and you being able to refer to it as well. So, you know, I look at that and to put this over into maybe a few other terms for folks to kind of broaden out their ideas about it. That's where the video tutorial library came from for Blog Aid clients so that I could cover in class live a certain amount of things and then send them over to the library for more in-depth on any one topic, but also as a reference. And then I've got a plugins resource list. I probably go to that page more than anybody because I need to find out what plugin does what for what, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily have all of those plugins running around in my head all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you being able to use it. But then I think about what you did with your forums in the beginning, too. So if you go into these forums and you can answer questions for people,
mm-hmm.
for one, you've given them help because you had the answer. But you know, there may be two or three people that give two or three different answers. But if you can come in and give your answer and say, and for more, go see the book I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that gives you a whole other level of authority.
Yeah.
That they don't have. So whether you put this on Amazon or all that kind of, forget that. It still gives you authority just in answering people's questions and being able to give them deeper resources than the one question that they asked, and they get locked into you.
Yeah. Yeah, I you know, there are some very valuable forums which discuss, you know, students having problems in organic chemistry. Like there's just some pre-med forums, for example, and you know, it's nice to be able to go onto those forums and say, yes, here's the answer to your question. And, oh, and by the way, you know, you could find more information at this blog post that I wrote. I guess as a side note, the lovely thing about the subject that I'm in is that it's seasonal. Every year, the students turn over. And the content is really quite evergreen. The course itself doesn't change all that much. So right. The blog post that I wrote in 2010 is still relevant. If I had to do it again, I'd probably rewrite it. I feel like I'm a much better writer now than I was. But I keep them up there because the topic comes up year after year.
Well, I want to speak to that directly because of Google. But I want to go back to a couple of things first. You did this product development about a year and a half after you're into this, and you start seeing these patterns of questions. Plus, in the forums, you see the same thing. Mm-hmm. And if the content is evergreen, so are the questions.
Correct.
That come from it. So you don't even have to develop a book. Even if you had a facts page, where you have commonly or frequently asked questions, common problems, those kinds of things, a white paper, even if it's 2 or 3 pages long, maybe 1,200 words or whatever, that really takes somebody through links to, more information so you can repurpose all this content that you've got. Mm-hmm. So you can collect these things into different little pieces of topics and put up a facts page or an archives page that's divided into that with links back to all of these posts that you've written.
Yeah. So, for someone in your audience, if they're interested in a particular niche and they notice certain questions come up again and again and again from just people asking Yahoo Answers, for example, to be able to prepare something, use your knowledge and prepare white paper or something of that effect is a useful. It's useful for them. It's useful for you. It really is a sort of a win-win thing. And also, once it's up there, it doesn't become. Hopefully, it won't become less useful over time. I guess it depends on how rapidly your field changes. But
I want to talk about rewriting some of your content, though, because Google's, their algorithm now really prefers fresh, and I am absolutely 100% convinced that's how I got to the front page of Google, like on 2 different posts 2 days in a row, and it doubled my traffic.
Oh.
And I stayed there for a while. I haven't looked again to see how much it's fallen. That's just been in the last week or so, but it was a very hot topic in the news, and so, I jumped on that. And not only to help people, but giving me that kind of promotion because of this Google algorithm change of fresh. So regardless of how much authority I may or may not have had on that particular topic, meaning that I may know what I'm talking about, but I don't post about that one thing all the time like some people do. That builds up authority if you only post about one thing. But regardless, I'm well above everybody else. I'm right under huge sites like Mashable and that kind of thing in the listings, number 1, number 2, number 3 on the front page of Google. And I saw it immediately in my site traffic, and it hasn't gone back down to normal yet. And that was a week and a half ago.
That's lovely.
So, right. And those things come and go. But, for you, I would think that you have authority, and this is huge. Authority is the new SEO. So that's huge with Google that you're writing about a focused topic all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, if you can repurpose that content and say the same thing just in blog posts that even point them back to the bigger blog posts, bring out one point and point them back to other mm-hmm. things in your site, that you're repurposing all of your content. You have something fresh for Google, and you're not completely spinning the post or rewriting it again, but you're pointing them back to the original, then you get double brownie points for that.
Yeah. There's a reason why organic chemistry textbooks are 1,000 pages long. I'm not even close to running out of things to write about, so I feel like I'm not even close to being worrying about repeating myself or even mm-hmm. Rewriting blog posts. I'm still trying to cover topics that I have ignored for 3 years. So I'm fortunate in that regard, in that there's a huge amount of stuff to write about that is also quite relevant.
Yeah, and to be able to put out something, a page with a lot of links. So it's a lot shorter to put out one page with 1,000 links than 1,000 page book.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to consider too, for people to recycle their content or ways to present it so that you can quickly hand people the information. Especially if it's broken down by topic, that's a good thing. So can we move on just a little
sure.
bit here to where you went next after this? Because you've got your sites humming along. You've traded over from just clients that you're getting paid by the hour over into products too, you know, while you're keeping your students and that kind of thing. And then you got ready to take it up another level by doing something like a membership site.
Well, so the products were really just a trickle at that point. But what I found was that the WordPress.com framework was just, the training wheels were cramping my style by that point. I felt like mm-hmm. I'd found my voice as a writer to some extent. I needed to be able to promote a product. I wanted to send them to redirect them to a landing page. I wanted to be able to collect people for a mailing list. I wanted do a lot of things that weren't available for just like the free version of WordPress. So actually the big scary thing I did, everything I did was scary in the beginning, was to hire someone to basically upgrade me from WordPress.com. on the WordPress.org, you know, to basically have a self-hosted WordPress site. So that was a bit of a big barrier for me to overcome. And then, you know, I just basically copied what a lot of other successful people had done. I personally used Thesis, and I found a Thesis developer. And then it all sort of, and I kept a very simple design. And I was able to do that for just a few $1,000. So just moving from there, that gave me a lot more flexibility to sort of build, the business end of my, site. And, again, it came up, the whole thing with listening to your customers or listening to the people you're talking to every day. I found another problem which they were experiencing, which was not just the reagents, but they wanted to have, I had a student who said, I've got 130 reactions that my professor says I need to know, and I need to know them by, you know, next week. Do you have a list of all these reactions and their mechanisms? I'm like, 130. So, you know, and that, okay, that sounds like a lot, and it is, but there's a lot of repeating patterns in chemistry, so it's actually not that bad. But what I realized, though, enough people came to me with these types of problems that they really wanted this almost like encyclopedia of all the different reactions in organic chemistry. And so for that, I figured out what they would want to see. So they'd want to see like they basically put a really great Wikipedia page for each reaction. Imagine that. So I essentially had to build the equivalent of 170 Wikipedia pages to cover the 170 most common reactions. And Wikipedia for these reactions is actually not that useful for many students. That's another reason why this whole site idea has worked, because a lot of the things you think are free and people should just use, they just aren't good enough for the student in need. So anyway, I built this reaction encyclopedia, if you will. That took a couple months of just working on that every day. And then I couldn't put that together as a PDF. It just felt like it would be ridiculously big. It would probably be 400 pages, which is just too much.
Right.
So I decided that I would just have this live on my website, and I would put up a membership plugin. And so the membership plugin that I chose was Wishlist Member. And so that became like this gated area of the site. And I charged them $10 a month to access that part of my site.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, even at that low price, you've got at least these people locked in for an entire year.
Well, I find like the average is about 2 months.
Okay.
But in theory, yes. In practice, I find that the interest in organic chemistry spikes around exam time. And it falls
Imagine
off pretty
that.
Quickly after that, yeah.
Imagine that. So, I mean, if you needed to, you could actually charge just a little bit more. But, you're talking about students and their budgets and that kind of thing already, too. But just having it available, it makes you the one go-to source. And so you know you're going to have repeat clients. So if you've got volume there, then it pretty much pays for itself. But like you said, you create it once, and then it sits there and pays for itself all the rest of the time and pays you money. You don't have to go in and do anything else to it.
That's right. I mean, every month that goes by or every day that goes by and that the sales get made is essentially increasing the hourly wage that I would have earned for building that product.
So. Exactly. So it just keeps paying and paying and paying, and you don't have to touch it because it is evergreen.
Right.
So your site evolved after that, too. I mean, you went through another redesign, and this is, what, a couple of years in? now 2.5 years in?
Yeah, so let's see. So a year and a half is when I started the original product. And then a year and a half is when I had the first redesign. And then a little bit after that, when I started building the reaction guide, I actually didn't install Wishlist Member. I had that part of my site free for a long time, actually, because I didn't really know. I was a little scared to install Wishlist Member, and I had other priorities with the site at the time. And I was building up a mailing list as well. That was the thing. That was another thing I was scared. Everything that I've done initially, I was really just terrified of doing, and I just did it. And now I look back and I think, wow, you know, it's silly to be scared of, you know, writing my first blog post. I can't believe how scared I was, but I did it. Anyway, so yeah, the Wishlist Member, that would have been, yeah, it was free for about a year. So it was after 2.5 years that I really installed Wishlist Member. That for the start of last school year, essentially September 2012. Since then, let's see. I mean, the site just continues to grow. I think what the project that I really wanted to work on was building my organic search traffic.
Yeah, and that was a whole journey. So you're almost 2 years into this, and you've got your marketing going. You've got your marketing mindset, because I remember when you got into Wishlist and then you redesigned that site, because that's when you and I met, was mm-hmm. when you got into Wishlist. Mm-hmm. But I remember you going through that redesign, and I could tell your marketing mindset was all there. You simplified everything. You let people self-select, and you really were making great strides in understanding how to promote your brand and how to promote what you did. And so SEO, of course, is going to be the next thing up. So you really started digging into that at that point.
Yeah, I was feeling a little, miffed that, I had been doing this for 2 years, and I felt like I had a lot of really high-quality blog posts on my site. And I was still ranking I was on the 6th or 7th page of Google when you search for organic chemistry. And I kind of thought, well, geez, I got to do better than that. So mm-hmm. I just made a conscious effort of going into Google keyword search and basically seeing what the most searched for terms were for organic chemistry and rewriting the titles of a lot of my posts and then the headers to include those types of search terms, those common terms. And it took, I spent maybe about a month on that. I mean, not every single day, not every single hour every day, but just sort of like a little bit, a couple blog posts a day. I go back over them and kind of optimize them for those terms, put them in where possible. And then I did finally start seeing a difference a few months later where I noticed I started climbing from, number 60 in Google search results to number 42 and then 31 and 28. And then it took about 4 or 5 months, but eventually I reached, I think, like 9 or 10, which is somewhere between 6 and 10 is kind of where I hover for that organic chemistry search term, which is 300,000 searches a month. In the grand scheme of things, not so big, but, big enough.
No, that's huge. I mean, that's huge. When you go up from 60 to 6,
mm-hmm.
that's a huge move in something like that. And I want to kind of sum that up. That you walked into blogging, you started seeing how the questions were coming and what students were asking for, so you optimized your business for your content delivery to them.
Yes.
So that you could still deliver that content in a way that wasn't one-on-one, but was, stop the dollars for hours, put it in things that they can access, like a product or a member site.
Mm-hmm.
And so you walked into that. Then you went into looking at your SEO at about the 2-year point, and honestly, that's what I see from a lot of folks. That's where they come to me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really doing the beginner level of I don't know what I'm doing, what I want kind of thing into the people who are like, okay, I've got an idea. I know what I need to learn now to move up to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's pretty much where you were in that with your SEO, and you were just doing the basics. You didn't go crazy over it. You just did your basic research yourself, changed the post, the titles, some of the very bare bones basic SEO things, and you rose that much without hiring a very expensive SEO firm. And I think that's radically important to point out to people, because they want to go hire these firms at, you know, $500 an hour or whatever it is, and they're not even doing the basics.
Yeah.
And they're...
I just tried to do the 80-20 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my site is so, you know, it's not like I was trying to rank for something like mortgages, you know, or personal finance. I mean, if you're in my space is not super competitive. So it was nice to be able to, you know, I knew that. I wasn't so worried about the competition. So I could just, you know, pay attention to what people were searching for and knowing what my students wanted, and just try to optimize, my search terms for that. Talking to people has been so huge for this. I mean, if I didn't have all those, I mean, I guess now it's thousands of hours of talking to students, about what their problems were, I would not have gotten to this point ever.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying about that. Me too. I want to talk about one of the problems that you encountered after this, because you're humming right along. Life is great. I mean, tell us about the traffic that you were getting right before the bottom fell out of this thing.
Yeah, so, you know, the good part of getting traffic is that, you know, you have suddenly all these visits to your website, and it's fantastic. And then you start getting emails from your hosting provider saying, you are going to exceed your bandwidth for the month, you know, or,
yeah.
And, you're like, oh, geez, I should do something about that. And then, I sort of looked into it in a little more detail, and, I'm not, you know, I should be more I've got a PhD, and I'm like the least technical person on the computer side of things. It is, you know, this is a very narrow field of knowledge I'm an expert in. Anyway, so there was, so one of the files in my WordPress was just like firing all the time, and I've learned later that it's just something that doesn't scale. I wish I could tell you what the file name was, and I've unfortunately forgotten it. And that's one of the problems. That's one of the reasons why I was using MediaTemple at the time, that I was using all this bandwidth. There was just a lot of little. So I had that problem fixed. Someone fixed that for me, or helped fix that for me. I had to go in and do something like a cron job or something, so it didn't ping every single time someone landed on my website. But then I think it was a week later that I updated my wish list to the latest version, and mm-hmm. It just broke. It broke my wish list, and it broke my blog. So some file in there. You know, I'm the worst person to talk to about this. I can't give you specifics, but something happened, and I to this day can't really tell you exactly what the file was or how it broke down. But basically, I my own server, but I was supposed to be my own sysadmin, and I'm terrible sysadmin, the world's worst sysadmin. So I just realized that this problem was just far beyond my ability to solve. So I basically put up the white flag of surrender and hired WP Engine. I put my hosting on WP Engine. They basically host your site for you. They are also, they kind of take care of it, prevent it from getting hacked. So they take care of a lot of the back end. You lose a little bit of flexibility with just how you configure some of your files and stuff like that, but it's not stuff that, you know, you'd ever really need to worry about. But my blog was down for a few days, and this just wreaked havoc on, unfortunately, on the people who had subscribed to my membership site. So, you know, people were, trying to get to their, you know, to my membership site part, and, it wouldn't let them log in. Wishlist was broken. It couldn't update. So I had to take that part of my website down. I had to take off wishlist members, so I was losing revenue in that respect. But just worst of all, it was just bad service on my, my blog wasn't a very good service for people.
Hold up. Go back and repeat that sentence about very bad service on what, because we're breaking up a little bit on Skype.
Oh.
So, yeah, repeat that part about what was bad service.
Well, I felt like I was providing a bad service for my readers because my blog had gone down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I hadn't taken good enough care of my plugins and so forth. So I paid for WP Valet to basically migrate my site from – Media Temple to WP Engine, and then I paid for WP Engine to host my site and basically take care of it. And since then, there have been very few problems.
Mm-hmm. I do want to back up here and talk about a couple of things that, you know, in all that mess, I do remember some of that when Wishlist Member upgraded. They had a very special kind of upgrade that time. Normally it's just update your plugin, you're all good to go. But that particular one literally required you to take Wishlist Member out and install the new one, and or go through very specific steps to do that. I don't know that they were exceptionally clear in putting that out to folks. And people, oh, okay, a new one here, just upgrade, and poof, everything goes bye-bye. And they had a lot of troubleshooting on their hands from folks trying to do upgrades. I know I got caught in it, and there were certain scripts that you had to put in and all kinds of different things. So it's all better now. Mm-hmm. But you have to be very careful when you have things like that that your whole business depends on. And like you said, following these plug-in updates, doing specifically, most people are not techies, and they're not geeks, and it's scary to them, and they don't want to handle this. They want to go off and do the things that they're an expert at, and yep. They don't need to be techies. And I think WP Engine and other hosting providers like that are filling in a void for folks to say, look, we'll take care of the techie end of it for you. Yep. Now, like you said, you do lose some flexibility with that. There are certain plugins that they won't allow,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you really need to check that, and it's not cheap.
No.
When you get somebody looking after your site like that. So, you know, it depends on where you are in this and what your revenue stream is as to what you can afford. And I know a lot of folks are going to managed site services from their neighborhood geek, you know, whoever their geek mm-hmm. buddy is. And it's a little cheaper because I think things like WP Engine and whatever start at $30 a month. And some folks just cannot afford that. But, you know, a business like yours, you can afford not to sometimes. Or you're going to hire somebody personally, you know, to take care of it too. So I think, and there are a lot of VAs, and not to say anything bad about any VA or anything like that. I'm just saying there are a lot of people who are doing sites who really don't know what they're doing with security and whatever. And it's very important to properly vet the people who are taking care of your site, especially these days with security the way that it is, and make sure that you make the best decision for yourself in that.
Yeah, this only became a problem for me, I think, when I hit about 3,000 site visits a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before then, you know, I think everything was there wasn't really any major problems, but 3,000 to 4,000 visits a day, that's when I really started using a lot of bandwidth. So
yeah, you started out like 3,000 for the year.
Well,
that's good.
Yeah, 50,000 for the first 12 months. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and you know,
up to 3,000 a day. So where are you now? What are your goals? Where are you going with this?
So right now, you know, like I said, there's a reason why organic chemistry textbooks are 1,000 pages. There's a lot of material. So I just continue to build. I'm still writing content that I haven't written about yet. So it's nice in that there's still a lot of ground to cover. What I'm doing right now, actually, is starting to move to I can't really do one-on-one tutoring as much as I used to. I just became a father. So it's sort of difficult to schedule. But what I what I can do, what I've started doing, is one-to-many tutoring. And mm-hmm. so I've started getting into GoToWebinar, and I've run a few webinars just for small people. This is another reason why it was great to have a list. When I decided to start doing webinars, I just sent out an email for people like, you know, I'm going to do a presentation on this very specific topic next Sunday at this certain time. Anyone who's interested, just go to this webpage and, you know, pay $1. And then, you know, I'll take the first 10 people and we'll do this. So that worked out really well. So I think this coming school year, what I'm going to be doing and what I'm starting to prepare is a series of presentations on these common problems that students have, and divided into a couple of modules. I think it's about 16 I'm planning. And again, this all is informed by the, you know, thousands of hours I spent talking to students one-on-one about their problems and helping them through this. So just trying to build these 45-minute to 1-hour-long presentations which cover the essential stuff they need to know for each topic. And I'm going to end up doing these webinars probably on a 5-nights-a-week type basis, and that will probably eventually go into my membership site as well. And beyond that, I think that, you know, eventually they'll there's one day there's going to be one big package called, you know, Master Organic Chemistry. but I'm not really at that point yet. But that's the sort of the end goal, is to have one big comprehensive package that helps students go from beginner to expert.
Absolutely. I think, James, it's so inspiring to hear this, that you have walked into this from like a $200 investment, being on free hosting with WordPress.com. You did all of the legwork that you had to do to walk yourself into getting clients while you were building authority on, you know, on your site, getting your voice, seeing what these questions are, and about a year at a time going up to the next level,
mm-hmm.
you know, and take it, and not being afraid to, okay, I did that. I'm still scared of the next thing, but I'm going to go do it anyway, and jumping right in and taking this through. But you didn't just focus on, you know, the organic chemistry part of it, but all the delivery tools, because tech changed quite a bit from 2010.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you started this stuff, technology changes, mm-hmm. the delivery things change, and you kept up with all of that. You kept up with the marketing opportunities as well. So you stayed well-rounded into all of this and increased your traffic, increased your student load, and then have to the point that you've got to go into group type things, because you can, there's only so many hours in the day, and you couldn't possibly take all the students that are coming. You've got to be able to scale your business. I think that's an amazing story.
Well, thanks. I mean, if I can make a bad joke, I mean, everything just kind of sort of happened organically. just it's all a consequence of you know, the logical place to start, and then you just, the problems you hit along the way are usually pretty predictable problems, and you deal with the problems as they come up. And like I said, I just sort of told myself that I wouldn't worry about anything fancy for the first, you know, I wouldn't worry about things like SEO for the first 2 years. I would just, you know, the most important thing was just to focus on getting my voice first, and then figure out how to teach. And then, you know, as problems arose, I just tried to address them as they came.
Mm-hmm. And I think your new focus, now that you've got those things down and focusing on SEO, you've clearly already got the authority, which is the other thing, and high quality content. Those are the things that Google's looking for now. You've been doing that since day one.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think it's just going to keep going, especially with these webinars, into the group teaching thing, where the thing almost runs automatically. You're going to be too busy to do any one-on-one.
Yeah.
So I wish you well with that. James, I thank you so much for being here today and sharing this journey with us.
Well thank you, man. And I should mention to your audience that actually it was Nayana, whom I met at WordPress meetups here in Nashville. And she was actually the one who inspired me to start getting with Wishlist Member. And you also were doing webinars long before I was. And so everything, every place that I've wanted to go, you'd already been there. So it was nice to have you around to ask questions of, and you've been really phenomenally helpful. There's a few times where I've had big questions about my site, and you've been able to help me out with that. So I really appreciate that. It's made a lot, it made a big difference for me.
Yeah, I am so welcome to help you with anything that you're doing, because what a success story to be able to, because so now you are working from home, you are making an income, and, you know, that's what everybody dreams about doing.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, we had our first child, and we were up in Canada for about a month, and I was able to essentially do that, take that time and help take care of our son, spend time with family. My wife just went to a conference for a week. I was able to go with her to that conference. I'm very flexible and mobile. Like I said, I don't really do one-on-one tutoring right now just because of my son. But it's great that basically my business right now consists of writing, like preparing new content, and then checking my email to make sure that everyone gets the product that they order. Of course, that's very important, providing good service for people who've, you know, paid for things. So, you know, it's nice to have that situation where I'm not tied down to anything.
Absolutely. And I'm going to ask you back on the podcast again in probably about another year, and if you have time.
I'm sure I will. I'm sure I will.
And see where you follow up on that and see where you've gone then, because this thing's going to take off at a whole other level again, too, for you.
I'd be happy to. That would be fantastic.
Thank you so much, James, and we'll talk to you next time.
Okay. Thanks, Mayetta.
We hope you've enjoyed this BlogAid podcast and feel free to share it with your friends. Be sure to visit BlogAid.net for more helpful podcasts, video tutorials, WordPress training, and site consulting. We specialize in helping non-geeks become successful site owners. You can also find BlogAid on iTunes.